Today is Monday, April 26th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedo for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Joe Biden set for first address to Congress.
One issue Biden is likely to address is police reform in the wake of the conviction of a former police officer in the death of George Floyd.
Also, Chad on edge as rebels threaten Capital City.
Following threats from rebels and the opposition, the Transitional Military Council deployed troops to protect N'Djamena.
Plus, EU to lift COVID travel restrictions on vaccinated U.S. citizens. These stories and more are next. With U.S. President Joe Biden set to give his first address to joint session of Congress this week, a slight majority of Americans approves of his performance, according to a recent poll. There are many issues Democrats and Republican leaders expect him to address. Michelle Quinn reports.
The address to a joint session of Congress will give President Joe Biden a chance to take stock of the milestones from his first 100 days in office and set the course for his agenda in the coming months. In a recent Washington Post ABC News poll, 52% of Americans approve of Biden's performance. That slight majority is lower than any recent past president at the same point in their terms, except Donald Trump. One issue Biden is likely to address is police reform in the wake of the conviction of a former police officer in the death of George Floyd, a black man. A Democrat police reform bill named for Floyd has passed the House of Representatives and is being considered in the Senate.
I hope that he lifts up the issue again and that he talks about the urgency of doing something right now. And I think that will provide encouragement for us to move the ball forward.
But Republican leaders want Biden to address immigration and the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border, which they call a crisis. In the same poll, 53% of Americans say they disapprove of Biden's handling of the issue. Republicans see this as a vulnerable area for Biden.
We have to create, security at the border, and let's figure out how we make this a country where people that want to live the dream that we want to live can come in here on a legal basis.
The Biden administration is considering policies to make conditions better in Central America to help stem the flow of migrants. Vice President Kamala Harris, who has been tasked with the administration's effort, is expected to travel to the region in June. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Negotiations are narrowing on a compromise for a sweeping U.S. police reform bill in Congress, though passage remains uncertain. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Democratic Representative Karen Bass, who introduced the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, says she's optimistic about passage.
I believe that we can get there. I absolutely do. What's most important is that we come up with ways to hold police officers accountable.
Republican Senator Rick Scott says he'll negotiate, but
what I'm not going to do is put our law enforcement community in a position that they've got to second guess themselves when they're trying to make sure people are staying safe.
He wants elements of fellow GOP Senator Tim Scott's bill included.
In his bill, we had incentives to stop chokeholds.
Both spoke on ABC's This Week. I'm Julie Walker.
India's coronavirus cases hit a record for a fifth day on Monday as countries including Britain, Germany, and the United States pledged to send urgent medical aid to help tackle the crisis. Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
The international community is stepping in to help India as it battles a devastating second wave of COVID-19. The US, Britain, France and Germany have all announced they will be sending medical supplies to the country. As cases surge, breaking new records on Monday, hospitals across India are running out of medical oxygen and beds. Patients are dying for want of treatment while they queue outside hospitals waiting to be seen. Britain's Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab.
We're sending out an emergency shipment of over 600 items of equipment. They're ventilators, oxygen concentrators, and the aim is to provide the support that the Indians need at their hour of need, really, if judging by the distressing scenes we've seen in many of the hospitals in India.
The US is sending raw materials to help India manufacture the Covishield vaccine, along with medical equipment and protective gear to help India respond to what has been billed a COVID tsunami. There have also been calls for the U.S. to send its AstraZeneca vaccines that have not been approved for use domestically. President Joe Biden said on Twitter, quote, just as India sent assistance to the United States as our hospitals were strained early in the pandemic. We are determined to help India in its time of need. Germany and France have also pledged to send oxygen and medical supplies. And the European Commission said it would respond to an appeal from Delhi for help. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi said on Sunday a, quote, storm of infections had shaken his country. He himself is facing criticism for failing to prepare health systems for this latest wave and allowing for big religious and political gatherings to take place. The capital Delhi extended its lockdown on Monday to try to arrest the surge. There are concerns that new variants of the virus emerging in India could undermine progress made elsewhere in fighting the pandemic.
That's Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters. A top European Union official said that Americans who have been vaccinated against COVID-19 should be able to travel to Europe by summer, easing existing travel restrictions. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
The European Union plans to open its doors to Americans who have been vaccinated by this summer. That's according to European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Sunday. She told the New York Times, quote, the Union's 27 members would accept unconditionally all those who are vaccinated with vaccines that are approved by the European Medicines Agency. Von der Leyen did not say when exactly travel could resume, but mentioned the agency has approved all three vaccines used in the U.S. It's been over a year since the EU largely shut down non-essential travel. Earlier this month, the EU agreed to launch vaccination travel passes to make travel easier for people who have been vaccinated, recovered from infection, or tested negative. Also on Sunday, the EU's vaccine task force chief said they are confident they will be able to produce enough vaccines to achieve its target for immunity of its adult population by the middle of July.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. The World Health Organization called for action to build and continue to work to create a malaria-free world as it marked this year's World Malaria Day. Lisha Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Despite the COVID-19 pandemic and multiple other crises, 24 countries are reported to have stopped malaria transmission for three or more years by the end of 2020. To date, 38 countries and territories have been certified malaria-free by the World Health Organization, including most recently El Salvador, Algeria, and Sri Lanka. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says malaria elimination is a viable goal for all countries, no matter how far they may be from the ultimate target.
WHO has identified a set of 25 countries with the potential to reach zero malaria within the next 5 years. Working together, building on each other's success, and supported with sustained funding, we can dare to dream of a malaria-free world.
Malaria is a preventable, treatable disease, yet every year it kills more than 400,000 people, most of them young children in sub-Saharan Africa. Additionally, more than 200 million people become newly infected with this deadly parasitic disease every year. Over the last 20 years, WHO reports more than 7.5 million deaths and 1.5 billion cases have been averted, most in sub-Saharan Africa. Despite this remarkable progress, director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says most cases and deaths continue to take place in Africa.
While Africa is the source of many of the big success stories in terms of impact, it is also the place where that carries the brunt of the disease and where we are finding it hard to make further progress. Nigeria and DRC, because they're also very large populations, account for nearly 50% of all the global burden of disease.
WHO says political commitment is crucial to ending malaria. The UN Health Agency says most countries that have reached zero malaria have strong primary health care systems that ensure access to malaria prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. WHO estimates up to $4.5 billion a year will be required to stamp out malaria. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Several African countries continue to battle the impact of the preventable disease that claims thousands of lives. In sub-Saharan Africa alone, malaria has claimed an estimated 380,000 lives in 2018, according to the World Health Organization. But there are some signs of hope in Somalia. Mohamed Kahiye reports from Mogadishu.
While Somalia is still not free from malaria, the country's authorities say there is some progress in the past 3 years in decreasing the number of deaths from the disease. That is welcome news for Horn of African nation struggling to cap other challenges, including drought and lack of security. Dr. Ali Abdulrahman is the manager of Somalia's National Malaria Control Department. He points out deaths from malaria has declined from 31 in 2018, 22 in 2019, to 5 last year.
There was a lot of interventions we have done, including a distribution of LNIL, long-last insecticide nets, to the target population, especially IDBs and vulnerable people, and IRS, indoor residual spray, were done in the riverine areas. And also, the case management was going on every health facility in the country.
Somalia has weak healthcare system and is poorly resourced, according to World Health Organization. Due to decades of insecurity and conflict, the country's institutions struggle to provide access to malaria prevention and treatment to those at risk of contracting the disease, including pregnant women and children.
That's reporter Mohamed Kahiye reporting from Mogadishu. This is the Voice of America. Activists in Myanmar's largest city of Yangon on Monday protested an agreement between the country's junta chief and Southeast Asian leaders to end a violent post-coup crisis. Around 2 dozen young protesters marched on city streets carrying banners that denounced the agreement by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, which did require the release of all political prisoners. More than 100 people linked to a pro-Kurdish party are on trial in Turkey's capital Ankara for their alleged involvement in a violent protest nearly 7 years ago. Prosecutors have charged 108 defendants with 29 crimes, including the murders of 36 people, and are seeking multiple life sentences and thousands of years in prison. Fighting between forces of Yemen's internationally recognized government and Houthi rebels continued in the province of Marib and Taiz, killing at least 70 fighters on both sides. The increase in violence comes over the past 24 hours, and at least 85 others were wounded, military officials from the two sides said.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA sent their newest rover, Perseverance, to Mars to look into the planet's ancient history for clues of a habitable environment and signs of past microbial life. A new study led by JPL's Jesse Tarnas when he was a graduate student at Rhode Island's Brown University suggests current conditions right under the surface of Mars are ideal for hosting microbial life. Tarnas and his fellow researchers studied the chemical makeup of Martian meteorites, which are rocks and other materials that exploded off the red planet's surface and fell to Earth. According to the study published in the journal Astrobiology, the analyzed Martian material, if it were to be in constant contact with water, would be able to generate the chemical energy needed to maintain communities of microbes, such as those living in unlit areas deep within Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Somalia remains on edge after soldiers exchanged gunfire in the streets of the capital Mogadishu on Sunday, in a sign of deepening splits in the security forces between those supporting an extension of Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed's presidential term and those opposed. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
Soldiers exchanged gunfire in the streets of Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, as crowds of people gathered. The country is split between those supporting President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed's extension for another term and those opposed to it. Meanwhile, former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud said on Sunday that soldiers attacked his residence and that the current president was responsible. President Mohamed, known locally as Farmajo, signed a law in mid-April extending his mandate for 2 years. That stoked opposition inside Somalia and put him on a collision course with Western donors. Earlier, Reuters witnesses heard gunshots in the capital as residents reported clashes between opposing factions in the security forces. A Reuters witness saw four military vehicles positioned in one place in Fagah. The forces in the vehicles came from the Abgal clans and are loyal to Saneh Abdullah, a military commander from the Hirshabelle area of central Somalia. Calls and text messages to the government spokesman went unanswered. Analysts say the divisions could distract Somalia's security forces from the fight against Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab insurgents in the Horn of Africa nation.
That's Roya Ali of Reuters. An uneasy calm pervaded Chad's capital, N'Djamena, since the funeral of President Idriss Deby, who ruled the Central African country for more than 30 years. Rebel forces have vowed to attack the capital city. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from N'Djamena.
A rebel force known as the Front for Change and Concord in Chad, or FACT, released a statement vowing to take the capital and depose the 37-year-old. Following threats from rebels and the opposition, the Transitional Military Council deployed troops to protect N'Djamena. Activist Fonjul Abdul of Chad's Rights Watch said. The Transitional Military Council, Abdul said, also declared a curfew in N'Djamena and is restricting movements of people in the city of over 1 million people.
There's total confusion in the whole country. There's a lot of uncertainty. People are afraid to go out, and the town has been virtually militarized. Chad does not know what future is being reserved for them. The opposition is not yet satisfied, and then the rebels too are threatening. So there's a lot of fear.
Chad's state radio and TV have been broadcasting messages from Mahamat Idriss Deby calling for peace. In the message, the new leader says he is open to dialogue.
Le réaction unanimement de tous les Tchadiens et des amis du Tchad.
He says he is very thankful for the support a majority of Chadians and friendly nations, especially France, have given his family since President Idriss Deby's death. He says his father worked tirelessly for peace, reconciliation, and the unity of Chad. Idriss Deby always encouraged dialogue, he said, as a solution to all forms of crisis. He says with the support of Idriss Deby's family and the Chadian people, he will continue to defend his father's ideology that is loved by most Chadians. Deby was a key ally of France in the fight against jihadist groups across West Africa, including Boko Haram, which has destabilized the parts of Chad, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, N'Djamena, Chad.
During Ramadan, many mosques are open, but because of attendance limits, there are no guarantee for a place to pray. But new phone apps can help solve the problem, as VOA's Yunis Salim found out in this report narrated by Nova Pawadi.
Many Muslims are eager to come back and worship in person during this year's holy month. But to keep the number of congregants under the capacity set by local authorities because of pandemic restrictions, mosque leaders have had to get creative.
We have two prayers, one immediately after Isha prayer and another around 11 p.m.
Mosques have also embraced technology, especially online and mobile registration. This was the case for the mosque run by Imam Muhammad Joban in the U.S. state of Washington.
We are now allowed 20% capacity. Thank God our mosque is pretty big, accommodating up to 1,000 people. Now each prayer is attended by 200 people. It's first registered for serve.
The Ar-Rahmah Mosque uses an app called Smart Jama'at, which translates to Smart Congregation, developed by a former IBM developer. The app tracks attendance at participating mosques and also alerts users to cancellations.
We would want to create these tools as at an enterprise level and give the masjids the tools completely free, so that way masjids would not have to actually spend their resources on just supporting the IT or any of the related activities to be able to do those ones in.
Another app used by mosques across the U.S. is the Masjid app or the Mosque app. Both the Masjid and Smart Jamaat were initially developed during the coronavirus pandemic to help keep mosques safe. But now they are being used to help coordinate nightly prayers during Ramadan, the Tarawih.
No registration required, no user ID to be created. So we just created, you know, anyone can download the app and connect it. So you can then search by location to find your masjid.
With technology like these apps, mosques around the United States have been able to balance the renewed enthusiasm to congregate for prayer with the need to keep everyone safe from COVID. For VOA's Yuni Salim, I'm Nova Purwadi, VOA News.
With diversity as center stage, minority Oscar nominees took home many coveted golden statuettes, but the three major awards for Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Cinematography went to white nominees. VOA's Penelope Palou has more.
Nomadland by Chinese-American filmmaker Chloe Zhao won the Oscar for Best Picture. The film captures the nomadic life of people across sweeping landscapes of the American West. The film's actors play alongside real-life American nomads living on the fringes of society. Frances McDormand won the Oscar for Best Actress as Fern, a woman in her 60s who packs up a few of her belongings and drives off in her RV after she loses her job during America's economic downturn.
My mom says that you're homeless. Is that true?
No, I'm not homeless. I'm just houseless. Not the same thing, right?
No.
Chloe Zhao won the Oscar for Best Director. She is the first woman of color and the second female ever to win this coveted award.
There's something about the vastness and the beauty of the American West is something that's inspired generations. It reminds you you're part of something bigger. There's a way to persevere.
Everything all right?
Who are you?
Actually, it's me, Paul.
Who?
I live here.
What is this nonsense?
Anthony Hopkins won the Oscar for Best Actor for his role as a father whose mind is deteriorating due to dementia. South Korean actress Yeo Jong-yeon won the Oscar for Supporting Actress in Lee Isaac Chung's Korean-American drama Minari about the immigrant experience in America. Yeo Jong-yeon plays Sunya, a South Korean grandmother who comes to America to help her overworked immigrant daughter and son-in-law raise the kids.
아이고, 아이고, strong, strong boy. Strong boy. 왜? 이런 소리 처음 들어봤어? 데이비사, 너는 strong boy야.
Daniel Kaluuya won the Oscar for Supporting Actor for his performance as Black Panther leader and activist Fred Hampton in the first all-black cast biopic, Judas and the Black Messiah. Hampton was shot by the police in 1969. He was 21 years old.
Anywhere there's people, there's power.
Hello, everyone.
Make yourself to home, Mr. Mankiewicz, or shall I call you Herman?
Please, call me Mank.
David Fincher's film noir, Mank, about 1930s Hollywood, won the Oscar for Best Cinematography, marking the third of the five major Academy Awards to go to a white person, leaving mixed results in diversity at this year's Oscars.
That's the real magic of the movies. Sun, blood, fire, religion.
Help! Someone save me!
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Why I always want Mank around.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.